You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 348, a mere two podcasts. We're really one podcast away from 350 Deluxo Edition Podcast. But we got a little bit of a treat for you tonight. Let's check it out. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we've got an off-kilter, a perhaps newfangled style release today, and you'll see why in a minute. I am also here with, first of all, the guy that does news, he does reviews, he does interviews. We are here with Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, what's happening out there in L.A.?
You know what? The last big thing that happened was, we're going to talk about it, Record Store Day, and then I'm seeing CJ Ramone tomorrow in Long Beach.
Nice.
With Big Eyes. So, yeah, I got, there's some things happening here.
Nice. Man, CJ is cool. For a while, CJ was getting nothing but hate from the punk fan base. Like, oh, CJ, he's the crappiest Ramone. And first of all, there is no crappiest Ramone. All the Ramones are cool, you know.
Glenn Burke.
Glenn Burke's cool. We actually have an interview.
Yeah, but not for his time with the Ramones.
We have an interview with Glenn Burke coming up where I ask him about the Ramones, and he has some very insightful commentary that I don't think has ever been talked about before. That other guy right there dissing my main man Glenn Burke of Blondie, my main man Glenn Burke of the Stranglers, my main Glenn Burke of the Melvins. That's reviews writer Tom Trauma. Tom Trauma, you've been reviewing some hardcore lately, man. What's happening?
Dude, I am on a thrash and hardcore kick, and it doesn't appear to be letting up anytime soon.
Are we in a thrash renaissance, or are we in a thrash dark age?
It's hard to say because my awareness of it has gone up so acutely in the last year or so. So it makes me want to say, oh, we're obviously having a great renaissance, but I don't know if it's just like been going on and I hadn't been paying attention, or I don't know. People tell me we're having a pop punk renaissance, and I think most of it sucks. So I just don't know, John.
You know, we are having a pop punk renaissance in that pop, the style of pop punk that became famous in 97, 98, 96 is very popular again right now within the punk
community. Yeah, unfortunately not the good stuff from like 92, 93, 94. It was the later, I'd say even later than that, John. I'd say late 90s, early 2000s style is what's come back in a big way.
I don't know, Tom. You're hearing a lot of that quote-unquote Ramones core stuff, which is, you love that stuff.
I know, but it doesn't have any rawness to it like the old days. You know what I mean? It's too slick sounding for me.
Would you call Screeching Weasel raw?
Oh, absolutely. Their early albums were not that highly produced. Early, you know?
Once, right.
I'll talk about a band like Masked Intruder, who I do like. I'm not going to speak poorly of Masked Intruder, but their recordings are too polished for my ear.
Oh, I fucking love it. But as a producer, I'm hearing a lot of things that just make me fucking drool. It's like, I want to know how much time they spent on those fucking songs, because they are, yeah, there's a lot of time put into those records.
I agree with Tom in that when you, like, punk in general right now is way, way, way too overproduced, and it really does take that snap away from it. I mean, the Ramones' first album was recorded in a day, right? I think. Or maybe it wasn't. But anyway, it was recorded in a short time.
It was quick.
But that guy handling the production back there, that is podcast producer Greg Simpson. Greg Simpson, man, what's happening?
And a renowned producer in his own right. Greg Simpson.
Greg Simpson, what's happening over at Sonic Iguana Studios? What have you been producing lately? What have you been working on lately?
Well, the most recent thing, actually, right before you guys called me, I got a message from someone who wants to interview me for the Lafayette newspaper about something I worked on. Actually, the very first project I worked on, this band Amuse from Indianapolis, who we've posted about quite a few times on Punk News. Their EP is finally coming out, and that was my very first thing I worked on at Sonic Iguana. So someone at the local newspaper is going to interview me about it tomorrow morning. So that's cool.
Are you going to show up drunk?
Well, you should, dude. You totally should.
It's over the phone. Yeah.
I picked today to have my first beer. It is so good.
I'm half a beer in and I throw up.
Well, listen, so we've got Tricky Ricky, we've got Tom Trauma, and we've got Greg DeSimp, but someone we don't have is Adam White. Adam White is not on the podcast today. We all miss him. And people say, John, where's Adam White? Adam White is on a spiritual retreat, I think, down in like South America somewhere. He's finding himself. He's learning who he really is. I think he's doing like those activities where you, like, you walk to a mountain like with a bunch of other men and then sit in a circle and really open up to each other as brothers and as fellow men. You know, and you let people know like what's deep down inside of you. What are you scared of? What are your fears? You know,
and chew coca leaves,
naked drumming, and like fistfuls of peyote.
Like, what do you want from life? And I think Adam White is really fine centering himself. He said he wants to get his chakras all aligned. So listen. We miss Adam White, and we wish he was here with us, but he'll be back next week, and he'll definitely be back for Podcast 350. So to that end, we've each written a poem in tribute to Adam White so that if he's not here with us, we can at least bask and reminisce about what we like about Adam White and bait him to come back to us from his spiritual retreat. So listen, who's going to go first? Who's going to go first? Rick,
I can go ahead. I'll go first. I forgot about this assignment, so as much like when I was in high school, I threw it together at the last minute.
Well, Tom,
so I'm fairly happy with my work.
As long as it comes from a earnest place, Tom, that's what matters.
Yes.
So, Tom,
and a fistful of peyote.
Tom, let's hear your poem, your tribute to Adam White.
Well, due to the fact that I couldn't rhyme his real Italian name, Bianco. Here's my poem for Adam. Roses are red. Adam is white. Without him around, we can finally have some fun tonight.
Oh, poor Adam White getting dissed. Ricky, let's hear your poem for Adam White.
All right. I did a haiku last minute. If I didn't get the syllables all right.
I'm counting.
Fuck it. We'll see. Hey there, Adam White. Look what happens when you leave. Forced to write poems.
That's pretty good. I like that. I like that. Not only is that a commentary on Adam White, it's a commentary on the other regular host of the podcast. A little passive aggressive, That's all right. Greg Simpson, what is your poem for Adam White?
Mine's a haiku as well, but I even threw a rhyme in there. It's Adam White is red. Adam White is super bad. Adam, please come back.
Suck up.
A earnest place. Well, listen,
I'm stuck with you guys. He maintains the order. I don't know how this is gonna go.
I know, that's why it's fun when he's gone. There's no order.
This is mine. It's just called WHITE, and here's my poem to Adam White. A rose by any other name would be just as sweet, but what does a man have if he doesn't have his name? Keep this in your frame. Life is a game if you got fame or you don't got fame, or if you're weak or mighty. See, this is slam pit slam poetry. So go with me if you follow me while we see the leader of punk news. So let's get this right, Adam White, as I got you in my sights tonight under the lights. When you say white, does he mean white is right and all that bullshit might meant to cause fright, incite fear into obeying by his hand? Is Adam White the man? Is he the man? Is he the man? Is he the man? Damn. Or should I say goddamn? And when I say goddamn, do I mean God above men? Do I mean God as a man? Or do I mean God as the plan? Man. Now, I ain't tripping. I think you're missing this whispering going on when one side of the podcast is on mute. This is sonic loot, even if it's a hoot. So while you are driving in your car near or far on the way to work or home or on a date, I can't be late. I can't be late. I can't be late. Like a rabbit on its way to mate. But you do hear those breaks and hit the brakes like a snake come on the farmer with a rake when you hear the thoughts and the sounds of the Nightbirds intro on the Punk News podcast. Introspection and discussion straight from USA to Russian. When this Adam White, this managing editor, talks, you say, who could say it better? He does not go on the attack and he does not stab people in the back, but he really doesn't retreat. And it's rare in an argument that he is beat or beaten or weakened. And he's down for the weekend. Friend, the man has got demeanor, like Demeter.
Oh God.
That's the goddess of love. Hey, don't forget that glove, bruv. But back to the topic at hand, Adam White. He's got that Canadian brand, non-confrontational, thoughtful, artful. He ponders and wanders and wonders, but rarely does he blunder when discussing the controversy de jure. It's yours and his. No matter the stance. With Adam White, you find yourself saying, eh, I think he's right. I think he's right. I think he's right. What is white? White is nil, but I don't mean dirty. White is blank, and it weights your projection. You don't need protection from that which assumes your own direction of selection. Why do you find that you agree with Adam White almost all the time? I'll ask you back. What's in a name? White. That's Blanco and Bianco. It's the absence of color and form and total purity, which the yes, which the eyes can't ever, 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 ever truly see. Adam White is what you make of him to be. Adam White is you, and he is me, and he is him, and he is her, and they are them, and we are we. And Adam White is us, and we are he.
Dang. I think we need to call John Homer, because that was an epic poem.
Why am I not shocked that his was 10 times as long as all the rest of ours put together?
The teacher always does the assignments better than any of the students. You know, they
I guess.
They put a lot more into it.
He's been working on this for like 8 years.
So listen. He
considers this his greatest work.
That's our tribute to Adam White. We look forward to having him back next week. We're going to do a lot of talking about Record Store Day today. I had a lot of fun at Record Store Day. I think the other guys did too. But before that, let's play a tune. Who's going to play a song first? Who's going to play a jam? Greg.
Greg, play a jam. So someone else go.
Oh, all right. Tom, play a jam. Okay. Ricky, play a jam.
Tom. Wait, is Tom there?
Yo, sorry. I muted my mic. You know, I have that loud computer, so I always try to mute my mic so it's not the sound of like the train in the background.
What would the podcast be
without when I start yelling, when I start yelling back at you, I probably should turn it back on. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
What would the Punk News podcast be if it was not a interminable technical difficulty? Tom Trauma, play a song so we can come back.
I could just see the sales pitch right now when I go to my wife and say, we need to get a new computer because ours is too loud when I'm doing the podcast. And her eyes roll so far into the back of her head and she starts levitating.
Tom,
but anyway,
play a song and we'll come back and we'll talk about Record Store Day.
All right. I'm going to play one of my favorite of the newer thrash bands. They have a little bit of punk in them. They are called Toxic Holocaust, and it's Joel Grind, who's kind of an uber metal producer himself. It's his band, and I'm going to play, this is from their 2013 album, The Chemistry of Consciousness, and it's called Acid Fuzz.
And that was Toxic Holocaust. I think they've got a split record with Municipal Waste, I think. They're kind of in that same
vein. They do.
Yeah. Yes. So listen, Record Store Day was this past weekend. A lot of people got a lot of thoughts on Record Store Day. I always have fun. So let's talk about it. Ricky, I know you're a big Record Store Day guy. What did you do on your Record Store Day? What did you pick up?
Okay, so this was my third year going to Amoeba Hollywood. It was definitely an experience this time. I woke up around 10 to 4 in the morning. And then, and for some reason, my brother wanted to come. But he wasn't getting anything. He just wanted to be there to see what it was all about. I'm like, all right, we're going to be sitting for 6 hours if that's your thing. But
how old's your brother?
He is 22.
Well, that's cute, man. He wants to see his big bro in action. He wants to see his big bro doing what his big bro does best.
Sitting and listening to podcasts on the sidewalk in Hollywood. Yeah. That's
Did you guys share definitely. Earbuds? Like each of you had one of the earbuds?
We didn't. He had his own. I believe he had his own. He was listening to something else. But
so you know, sat there not talking.
No, we did. Believe me. It was just like, but by the time like 7 or 8 a.m. started, like it was around that time, like we were both like starting to kind of crash a little bit. So yeah, we got there at 4:30 in the morning. I'm not kidding. There were 150 people ahead of me.
Dang.
It was insane. Christ. I got interviewed by a YouTuber I actually follow. His name's Matt. He does a YouTube vinyl thing called, he has like a channel about that stuff, called Too Many Records. So he interviewed me. So I'm on that Record Store Day video looking extremely exhausted.
What's it called, Ricky? I'm gonna look that up.
Right, it's Too Many Records. Anyway,
Too Many Records.
He doesn't really do punk stuff, but he has a good aesthetic. Anyway, so I got there. I had my list all checked off because they take menus while you wait in line, and then they bag everything for you. And when you get to the front of the line, you can go inside, get your bag, and see what you got. This was hands down the most. So
are you allowed to just look around the damn store?
No, you're not. You're not. Not until it officially opens. It literally, I'm not so kidding. Stupid. The line goes. Or no, it's not stupid. It
no, no. For Amoeba Day, listen, Amoeba, it's the way they do it. Otherwise, it's just makes a sense. Mad.
Yeah, no, it's a. I can see that,
but that's the fun part.
No,
I get more stuff that's not an exclusive.
Go to Record Store Day 364 days of the year. You don't have to do regular record shopping on Record Store Day.
Greg, here's the thing. No. Here's the thing. The line, when it gets to about 7:30 or 8, it is literally around the store. The line is a full city block. So they have to do it. I remember doing a Record Store Day at Amoeba Berkeley 4 or 5 years ago, and it was a fucking madhouse. It was insane running around. It wasn't good. Anyway.
This doesn't sound fun to me in general. It's a baffling ordeal.
It was. I was able to, since my brother's holding my place in line, they blow up the menu that they have to show, like, and they, in real time, they check off what's been sold out. Nothing that this is hands down the most successful Record Store Day I've ever done, because I kind of separate my list into what I want from the stuff like I definitely need, then the stuff like I kind of want, then there's stuff I can do without, but it would be cool to have. I literally got everything this year. Nothing of mine sold out, and I was very happy with it.
But what'd you get?
Also, while we're in line, Coffee Bean brings out free donuts and coffee. So that was
Sounds like the best part.
It was, and you know, we did it right this time.
I love free things.
We did it right this time. Donuts. I brought fold out chairs, found a parking space where I can park for, as long as I needed to. It was great. So I got my bag here. Hang on a second.
I'd be afraid to drink coffee, Ricky, because I'm old and I'd have to pee, and I'm like standing out in the city street going, damn, man, where am I going
to
pee?
No, that's the issue. You have to wait for all the stores around to open.
And you have to have somebody to hold your spot.
Just whip it out and do it right there. No one's going to do anything.
Back into your coffee cup.
It's
hasn't worked for me well in the past.
It's Hollywood. I mean, it smells like piss all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
So the first thing I got, and this was the two things I really, really wanted was the Against Me, Sabbath of Christie 7-inch. The Sabbath of Christie song is really good. Both songs are good, but the Sabbath of Christie one was good. I wish the one theme I found among my the releases I got was like only one of them came with download codes and this one didn't. But it's great. It's a pink picture disc with some of that weird art that they've been into for the last several records. Yeah, so I picked that one up.
There's a guy called Steak Mountain that does that.
Yeah, that's Steak right. Mountain. That's right.
He was a combat wounded veteran.
Ooh, I like that stuff. He did a bunch of Adam in his package art, which we'll be talking about them later because of another story.
And then he also did some stuff for the Holy Mess as well. I got the, and I'll be playing a song from this, the Cobblestones Nothington 7-inch. That came on white vinyl, and it's good, especially since the new record came out. Then I got the Ramones box set of 7-inches, and it was really expensive, and if it was any more than what it was, I probably wouldn't have bought it, but it's cool. It's really
that was the one thing that really, I gotta say, really caught my eye. So what how much did it cost, Ricky?
I saw it for $85.
It was not,
I was gonna say, they were selling on their website leftovers for $80. Yeah.
I did not pay $85 for it.
You paid less than that.
Yes, I did.
Well, you can just tell us.
$83.95.
We're not going to make fun of you. We're just curious.
Yeah, I just don't want to say it out to everyone else, but I'll let you guys know after.
You know what, Ricky? You're better off because the $80 one online probably costs $15, $20 a ship. It's a heavy box.
Mm. Yeah, anyway, so it's cool. It's a really high quality box. And what I did to open it was I
cut. I'll give you $60 for it if you send me.
I'll give you $40. $40.
It was on eBay before the store.
All right, fine.
Opened.
$35.
Oh God, I'll give you $25 for it.
Anyway, it's just like literally they got paper, like they just redid each 7-inch like the way it came out originally. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them. So overall, it was a good value. It was just a little high for my taste. What I did was I cut around the saran wrap so that I can open it, but it's still...
There's 10 of them in there. I swear, Ricky, there's 10 of them, isn't there?
John, Tom, you are right. There are 10.
That's why it was $83.95 and not $85.
Yeah, exactly. You got ripped, dude.
No. I did not. I paid less than $85. But anyway,
I didn't realize that the Ramones singles had like some live cuts. Like, aren't some of the tracks like live? I didn't know that. I don't know if that's
a couple of them. A couple of them.
Yeah, there's. Are those on the remastered CD?
I don't know. I think so. There were 10. I believe that there were 10.
Yeah, I didn't see anything that looked particularly exclusive. It was just a cool package.
Well, I mean, what was cool was there's one 7-inch that has a promo edition of I Want to Be Sedated in mono. And then on the B side, it's a stereo version. Rock and Roll High School is one of them. And it's cool because that one has like the movie poster as the cover. And then Do You Want to Dance, which is live, is on the back of that. There's I got this record recently too. California Sun and I Don't Want to Talk to Walk Around With You. That's a live version from the Live at the Roxy record that came out, I guess a year ago. So yeah, there are about 6,500 of these. So I'm glad I got that. And then you can go to my 12 inches that I got. I got Andrew Jackson Jihad, Decade of Regression, Live at Side One Dummy.
How is that?
I've heard a few of them, a few tracks. This is the only one that came with a download code, so thank you, Side One Dummy. It sounds good. I wish they had done a little bit more old stuff, but overall, it's pretty good. It came on, like, this really cool, like, marble black and red vinyl that's really, just really cool. I hadn't really seen that before.
Oh, here's a question that we got an email. We're going to do email next week, but this is what some listener brought up, and you listeners can think about it. You know, AJJ changed the name from Andrew Jackson Jihad because they didn't want to be associated with Andrew Jackson or Jihads. Right. However, the new album, of course, is an homage to Slayer's Decade of Aggression, and they've been using the Slayer font. And I'll read the letter next week, but the listener... The question was, how come it's okay for them to use the Slayer font, which was built, was borrowed from what do you call them? A Stufenwaffle or S soldier? What do you call those guys? Stufenwaffle from the Nazi Germany.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean?
So I think, you know, yeah. I'm not looking when it comes to this, like, you know, changing stuff because of feelings or whatever. I'm not looking for consistency. I just want to get it over with and just make it fast.
No, but I'm saying that's what the person was asking, and I want to think about that.
The whole thing, I mean, I...
Is it Stufenwaffel? What are those guys called?
What, the SS?
Yeah.
Luftwaffen?
SS. The SS. Yeah.
Anyway.
Just SS. Yeah, just SS. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry. Yeah,
Schutzstaffel.
So, the lightning bolt. Listen, the cool lightning bolt SS.
Yeah, it's real cool.
Well, they look cool.
They were the coolest dudes.
Listen,
you get hate mail next week. I always knew Tom was a Nazi.
Yeah, I don't look for... I don't know. I don't look for this kind of stuff to be that well thought out. Anyway... and then this was unexpected because this wasn't on the US list, but it was on the UK list, and somehow Amiibo was able to get it. It was UK subs Live and Loud 89, and it's and it says AKA Greatest Hits in Paris. So I guess it's a live record of them playing their best stuff in France. And this one was also, there's only 1,000 of them made. And, but this one, in terms of, quality, this, they did a really nice job. Mine came on bright red vinyl and it's 180 gram. So, very happy with that. And I need to listen to this. I haven't listened to it yet.
That's an interesting era for the UK subs, cause that's after like the classic period. But a lot of people think they did a lot of neat stuff during the '80s and nineties, you know? So I'll be interested to see how that sounds.
Yeah, and also, I mean,
Charlie was a young, like, 45.
Yeah, you know, Charlie was, like, 35 when the band started, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's 70 years old.
He's old, yeah, he's, actually, and Tom, we won't get, did you know Danzig's, like, 63?
What? Danzig is almost as old as my parents.
People make fun of Danzig's the freaking man. He's like 63 and he's doing what he's doing. Anyway,
he might be the man, John, but I heard that new song and it didn't sound like any man I wanted to hang out with.
Go ahead, Ricky. Tom's got to get in that Danzig jab. Oh, he claims to be a fan.
Dude, I always say, John, I can attack because I love, nobody's given Danzig more money over the years than I have, but he is not.
I can guarantee you someone's given more money to Danzig than you have over the years.
Probably. But I mean, I've seen him at least 10 times. Yeah. I have every recording, every record he's ever put out.
Go ahead.
And I'll buy this one and piss and moan about it.
And then, so that's what I got. And then I think I forgot to mention the Against Me 7-inch came out with 4,000 copies as opposed to the last time they put out 7-inch, which only had like 400. And I think that's it. I mean, the UK subs record actually is they did a really good job with the quality, like I said, but also, there are 22 songs on this. There are like 3 bonus tracks, and, I'm really looking forward to listening to this. Overall though, great Record Store Day. I was exhausted when I got back home. I'm not kidding. I fell asleep on my couch with gum hanging out of my mouth.
That's dangerous.
It was dangerous, and I woke up.
You could have burned down the house. Go ahead, Greg. How was your record store day?
Yeah, how was your record store day?
Oh,
Greg, I think you and I scooped the same item, and I'll be interested to see your stance on that item. Go ahead.
Yes, I actually just listened to it because I figured we'd be talking about it. Well, I just listened to it for the second time. Mine was the complete opposite from Ricky's in that I didn't even bother looking online when the store opened. You know, I just figured I'd roll in whenever. Got there around 10:30. There were maybe 8 people in the store. This is Lafayette, Indiana, keep in mind. And Purdue, you know, is a pretty big reputable college, but it's mostly known for engineering and aerospace shit and nerdy people who don't like cool music, apparently. So, yeah, they told me there was a rush in the morning. That probably meant there were maybe like 25 people in the store. I don't know. But I got...
There's 3 people in rush.
Geddy Lee is really the... Well, okay.
But they take up a lot of space.
Yeah, Neil Peart's...
A lot of sonic space.
Neil Peart's drum kit takes up... Yeah. It's like a mile radius, I think. You know, it's like a circle.
Three semis it takes to carry that drum set.
So, anyway, this is Vaughn's Record Store. It's been around since the 60s. It's actually a comic book store and clothing and bookstore and all this stuff. Pretty cool place, but the record selection has shrunk, but it's still a very cool small selection. So all I wanted to get, which is what you were referring to, John, the one thing, the Record Store Day thing that I wanted to get was the Bow promo, which is the David Bowie, demos from
it's not demos. Do you know the story behind this record?
I mean, I was just reading the thing actually, and well, it says right at the top that he his management company, GEM or GEM, was trying to get him a new recording contract. So they, I guess, they fronted the money for these recordings. And they're not demos in that you think that, like, I was originally like, oh, you know, it's maybe just voice and piano or something like that. But no, I mean, these are like string sections and guitar solos and all, I mean, all that stuff. I mean, the one, the, let's see, which one? It Ain't Easy is like, I mean, it's identical to the one that ended up on Ziggy Stardust. And some of the other ones, like.
No, you mean Hunky Dory?
No, not It Ain't Easy is on.
I don't think so, Greg. I think it's Hunky Dory. Let's find out. Let's find out. I'm pretty sure Bo Promo is an early version of Hunky Dory. It's mostly the same sound recordings.
It's mostly from Hunky Dory, but It Ain't Easy is Ziggy.
I'm pretty sure that's. I think it's Hunky Dory. Let me look here.
Go ahead. Go ahead and look. Go ahead and look. But then, like,
here it is, right here on Hunky Dory.
It Ain't Easy?
No, I'm kidding. I guess I'm wrong. But it's on Bo Promo?
Yep.
Oh, man, I didn't notice that. I thought Bo Promo was only Hunky Dory, but I'm wrong. You're right, Greg. You're right.
It is almost all Hunky Dory, except that one, which was odd to me that they saved it, I guess, because it's such a kick-ass song. But I guess, you know, thematically, he was looking ahead to the Ziggy story, I suppose. But Hunky Dory is my favorite Bowie record. So this was a must get for me because I knew that, yeah, most of it, like you said, is the early versions of those songs. And listening to it, I'm like, man, like, I was expecting more stripped down thing, but I was pleasantly surprised that the songs rocked as hard as they did. I mean, you know, the changes were harder to detect, the changes between these and the studio versions, but that's because they rocked so hard. They were, you know, great, great production, you know, just prior to the actual album recording. So
what did you think of the price tag and the presentation?
So, yeah, the price tag, $50. This may be the most I've paid for anything at a record store day. I'm pretty frugal with this kind of stuff because I've been burned before. Like, if I had to think back in previous record store days, like the Joe Strummer Pogues record is probably like stands out as one that I've actually listened to a lot, where there are so many things where I'm like, this is super cool, play it twice, you know, and then forget about it.
I love that record, man. I play that record a lot, dude. That record is an amazing record.
That's what I'm saying. It stands out as like one of the things that I bought that I'm most glad that I paid 40 or 45 or whatever it was. So $50 scared me, and it's just like this plain white box with you know, that like green label in the middle. But when I opened it up, it was like a little present. It had green tissue paper and a little sticker. And I tried to open the tissue paper without tearing it on the sticker. Couldn't. It tore. And then it's got like a little envelope, like a top secret classified looking envelope. You untie the string.
So it's already worth half of what you paid for it now that you ripped that, huh?
Yeah, yeah,
congratulations.
Right.
Well, you made a $50 record into a $25
record.
Once you
take it, once you drive it off the lot. Yeah, once you drive it off the lot. Yeah, I got an fender bender immediately. But yeah, so it's got these really awesome, thick, glossy photos, like from this photo shoot from around that, the long-haired, hunky-dory Bowie photo. He's got these big, elaborate ring with like a lizard on it. Really cool photos. And then the record is 180 gram and all that stuff that you'd expect. And it sounds really great. And the presentation's cool. I mean, I feel like it should have been maybe more like 35 or 40. But I'm not upset about paying 50 because it really looks cool.
I agree with you, Greg, in that, listen, I mean, I would have been perfectly happy with a $17.99 record and it's just the record. But with these deluxe editions, there's like these Rolling Stones deluxe editions. They're like $200. It comes with the record and like a pop-up, like stand-up of Mick Jagger, just complete garbage. Like, no one wants a little cardboard stand-up of Mick Jagger. That's garbage. You know what I mean? What is nice about this is it's a little overpriced, but they really put a lot of care into making it make sense. And that with the Bo Promo box, it's basically what they would send to DJs and record labels with all the promo material. So it was a little overpriced. But they did such a beautiful job on it. I don't mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, glossies is what you'd send. I mean, I even came up, you know, when I was in bands trying to get stuff onto record labels, I mean, little record labels, but you'd send, you know, the CD, glossy, you know, the bio and paper. I mean, some of you guys have been doing the journalism thing for long enough that you used to actually get packages with all of that kind of stuff in it. I mean, that's gone the way of the buffalo, but, and I just get a download. But so to get it like, yeah, like someone, like you said, like someone would have seen it at a label, you know, check out this guy, David Bowie. You've never heard of him, you idiot. He's so cool. And you get this box of stuff.
All right, Greg. Well, it sounds like you had a good time at Record Store Day. I did what I always do at Record Store Day is I go to two stores. I go to the first store I go to is one that actually has the exclusives. And then the second one I go to is what, you know, I talk about them all the time, Jupiter Records. Jupiter Records doesn't get the exclusive. They just buy a super rare collection, well, actually multiple rare collections, and sell rare records that aren't the exclusive ones. So I went to a recordsmith in the morning, and I woke up at 5 o'clock, got there at about 5:30, and I was next in line to two people. And the guy told me, and he could have been lying, who knows. He said he was the worst. I said, well, oh, what are you here to get? Which is always a dangerous question. You know what I mean? Because like if you were the ASCII and the guy's in front of you, you don't want to tip him off to something you want, because if he's a dick, he might buy and try to flip it, you know? Or if he genuinely wants it and you ask, what are you looking for? And you're looking for the same thing, then he and you on the, like first in line, first grabs is the way I see it, you know? And so if you tell him, oh, you know, I really want this new Off record, but he wants it too, then you're going to think he's a dick if he grabs it first, but maybe he really wanted it, you know? But sizing the guy up, I could tell he wasn't after what I was after. So I said to him, you know, what are you looking for? He's like, oh, I'm really looking for the Beatles record. I don't even know what the Beatles record was. And the Elton John record, which is a reissue of Elton John's first live record, which I don't know why anybody would buy that, because you can get that for $1 anywhere, you know? But he's going on and I'm kind of irritable at Record Store Day because I wake up early. I usually stay up super late the night before. And the guy was super friendly. But he's the kind of guy that you would ask him, like you're talking to him, and he would tell you a story, and you already know exactly where the story's going within the first 10 seconds. And it goes on for like 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like Tom, say to me, oh, so what were you doing in New York?
What were you doing in New York, my friend?
Well, we were going to go to Record Store Day at there's a mall in Staten Island. And in the mall, there's a record store. And they participate in Record Store Day. So the day
and I tied an onion to my belt.
So the day before,
which was the style at the time.
The day before, I called them up, and in accordance with Record Store Day procedures, I said, will you be open at 8 o'clock? And they said yes, they would, in accordance with Record Store Day procedures. However, the mall only opens up at 10 AM in the morning. So the question is, if the record store opens up at 8 a.m., how will people get there if the mall doesn't open till 10 a.m.? And the guy was just going, oh, and it was like 5:45. I'm like, I don't want this shit, dude. I just want to hit you. Anyways, so I'm talking to the guy, and the dude claimed to be the world's biggest Barry Manilow fan, and I believe him. I don't know why you would claim that, first of all, but the dude loved.
I would rather be a registered sex offender with it tattooed on my forehead than the world's biggest Barry Manilow fan.
Wow.
The dude had actually come back from a Barry Manilow fan signing. Guess how many times this guy's claimed to have seen Barry Manilow? I couldn't confirm it, and I didn't really care about confirming. But guess how many times this guy has claimed to see Barry Manilow? And I believe
apparently more than I've seen Danzig, huh?
50
more.
Times.
Ricky, what do you think?
20?
Tom, what do you think?
Oh, it's got to be like 135 times.
He could be lying. He said 499. And next month, he's going to his 500th show, and Barry Manilow is going to do something special just for him. So we'll see if it holds up. You know what I mean? But
he's like the Wilt Chamberlain of Barry Manilow concerts. If anybody gets the Wilt Chamberlain reference,
look, I don't think anybody really loves Barry Manilow, and this guy like is like a Barry Manilow maniac. You know, and
so people love Barry Manilow, John. Jesus. Like you know, like people's mother-in-laws and like things Tom like Jones. That. But
it's like Tom Jones.
Yeah. But no, because Tom Jones had like a raw like sexuality. Barry Manilow is.
But people's moms less like of that. Tom Jones. Yeah.
So anyway, so,
okay, so yeah, sure.
So anyway, Record Smith opens the door. People. Oh, and actually, the guy and his wife. Like, I think But like the opening to the room was the building was small, so they're just kind of like standing in the doorway, and I don't want to plow this lady over, but I want to get to my records, you know. So I kind of had to like wait till there's enough room where I could in good conscience maneuver around her and go grab Bo Promo, which is freaking awesome. But while I was there, I picked up the Tegan and Sarah record, which is actually better than I thought it was. It's a reissue of their first record, and it's got a little bit of the Lilith Fair thing going, but actually it's got some other stuff going too. It's real good. I picked up the Flaming Lips live record. It's not a real live record, but it's pretty cool. And what was interesting is that I picked up the Frank Zappa record, and while I was waiting in line, just kind of looking around the store, this asshole bumps into me, and I was pissed off. And I say to him, you know, you could say excuse me. He's like, I did say excuse me, but he didn't. So I like stared him down, and he was a dick. So he kind of just like walked away because you know. And so I had this
Philly friend. Philly is a rough place.
It was just some asshole, but I was irritable too, though. And so I got this Frank Zappa record in my hand. I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna buy this record. It's two songs. I've got it on CD. So I put it back, and then people are checking out, and I hear him say to the guy, "Like, do you have that Frank Zappa record?" And the guy's like, "I don't think we got it in." And I know where it is in the store because I put it back. So I didn't say anything.
Well, you know what was it? You know what someone pointed out to me about just Record Store Day in general this year?
A little bit expensive this year.
Expensive, but which I'll agree with. But there was no like hot ticket item.
Right. Actually, that's good. You're right in that there was nothing that was selling for crazy money online, and you actually are able to get almost anything that they were selling. You can get for a reasonable price online. So anyway, which is good. So I shot down to Jupiter Records. And Jupiter Records had an insane collection. They had a whole bunch of awesome 7-inches. I got some Musical Youth 7-inches. I got Mikey Dread and The Clash, which is an awesome 7-inch, pristine condition. I did get a Frank Zappa 7-inch. I got Eddie and the Hot Rods. I got Rolling Stones, UK edition of the Got Live, if you want it, 7-inch EP. Sounds phenomenal. But my big score there was I got an unopened original 1994 press, still sealed, Melvin's Stag album. And the question is now, I've got about 6 or 7 sealed albums that are worth some money. I've got the first Alice Cooper record sealed. I've got some Black Uhuru albums sealed. I got a Judas Priest record sealed. I've got Men at Work's first album sealed, unopened. What do I do with these? You know, do I sell them? Do I just look at them?
Man, you're one of those guys? Yeah, that's lame. Open them up.
No, why would I ever open it?
I mean, I have a few records I haven't opened up.
Yeah, but I'd be better off selling it and then buying one that's already opened.
I mean, do you already have an open copy or you already have a CD version of it or what?
Well, I would never open this record because if I wanted to listen to it, I would sell it and then buy an open one for like 1/10 the price. Hmm. You know what I mean?
If you had like Sgt. Pepper first press sealed, I could understand.
Yeah.
But why would you ever open it though?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it was like
it's hard, like that Melvin's album. I have no idea what that Melvin's album is worth.
Worth money.
Melvin's have really, they've really taken control of their own merch. And you go to their show, and it's like a freaking mini record store.
Yeah,
you
know,
all the crap they have, but it's expensive, man. Their reissues are expensive.
Well, the reason for that is because they're handmade. And the Melvin's argument is, if you want the CD version, you can get it for $10. But we're not in the business of subsidizing your record collection. So if you want the handmade ones, then you got to pay for it like it's a piece of art. You know, that's their argument.
Well, and I don't have a problem with that. You know, the same thing with that David Bowie record. You can complain about the price of it, but the fact of the matter is, you guys both bought it. The market can sustain that $50 record, you know?
The counter argument, though, is you get in a position where you only have wealthy benefactors buying records and the average man can't get them. You know, two arguments. But this Melvin's record, it's worth bank. I mean, it's not worth like $1 million, but it's worth what I would call not throwaway money. You know what I mean? Gotcha. And so I don't know what I'm going to do with it. My Alice Cooper record is worth a good amount of money, too. Do I just look at it and keep it as an artifact or sell it? You know, I don't know, man. Because it's only going to go down in value.
You know, I'm from the Malcolm McLaren school. I think you should throw it up in the air and shoot it with a shotgun.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
You do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, I'm from the making money school of thought. Anyway, Tom Trauma, you have fun. Anyway, Record Store Day, I had a blast this year. Record Store Day itself is a little bit overpriced, but I had a blast at Record Store Day. I had a blast at Jupiter Records. Great time all around. People can be jaded. I love it. I have a lot of fun. Tom Trauma, what'd you pick up?
You know, I had a fun day. I'll tell you about it a little bit. So my older daughter has got her permit like her driving permit. So she's always interested in driving because she wants to get her license soon. So I had her drive me around. Yeah. And we went to a record store called Dodd's, which is actually the oldest surviving record store in Michigan. It was founded in 1951. Now it's moved locations from downtown to the west side of Grand Rapids. The west side of Grand Rapids is like, it used to be just pretty much what you would refer to as white trash, but now it is multicultural trash. I mean, there's every kind of
multicultural trash. Tom, that's classic. That's classic.
But it's the UN store of trash. Is so tiny. So we get over there, and the reason, so we didn't go out early. I wanted to be there around 1:30, 2 o'clock, because there was a couple bands I wanted to go see playing back to back at that time. So we get down there, and the store is tiny, and the bands are set up right on the sidewalk in front of the store. We're talking a punk band and a hardcore band playing back to back on the sidewalk, just a regular sidewalk. So the people are kind of standing out in the, there's a bike lane and then a parking spot, or a parking spot, then a bike lane. I can't remember. And the people are like on the sidewalk and out in the road, and the bands are playing. And the reason I tell you about the west side of Grand Rapids is because this could only happen on the west side of Grand Rapids. Any like more proper part of town, the cops would have shut it down in 10 minutes. You know, I actually saw a cop drive by and look out and go, man, do I really want to deal with this? And just like took a right turn and left. But anyway, so it was fun, and we watched the bands, and I tried to go in the store, but it was so packed and it was so small that I actually didn't buy anything at the store. I actually bought a little bit of merch from one of the bands. But that was a lot of fun. And then we went down to, and I ran into a couple old friends, which is nice. And then we went downtown to Grand Rapids' best, biggest record store, which is called Vertigo Music, which is a huge place downtown that has, and Dodd's, the little place, has a huge amount of vinyl in it too. I mean, thousands of records. They're so stacked on top of each other, you can barely, I mean, I think you'd go blind going through this place, honestly. So then we went to Vertigo, which had bands playing all day, but this is a much bigger store, so they actually had the bands playing inside. And they also had a keg of Founders, which Founders is like our Grand Rapids brewery that's pretty much world known. But they had a keg of Founders beer, and they had pizza, and they had bands playing, and It was awesome. I mean, I know the owner over the years, and a couple of my friends worked there, and it was a great time. I picked up a few thrash things. You'll all be happy to know. I didn't buy any of the record store day things. I guess I was kind of interested in the Ramones thing, but I can't spend the money. My teenage kids are bleeding me dry. I'm very money conscious this year, especially. My oldest son is actually graduating from high school this year. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. I'm not really complaining. It was steep.
Dad, I was not thrilled.
Dad, I can't wait to go to college. Sorry, son, you're not going this year. Why?
I had to have this Ramones box set, son. Exactly. I know none of you guys have kids. Adam, my one friend, the one guy with the kids, not on this week, but it doesn't end anytime soon. But anyway, I drank like three very strong pints of beer for free, and I ate a couple of pieces of pizza, and I picked up Toxic Holocaust, a reissue of Venom's Welcome to Hell, an out-of-print Cryptic Slaughter called Speak Your Peace, and a Testament album that I didn't have called The Gathering.
I did buy one
punk album, and it was a band called I Object. That's not around anymore, like a hardcore punk band. And I had never heard them, but I always wanted to because the guitar player from that band used to run a local DIY space. And the stuff's all out of print, too. So
I like the name of that band. It's a good name.
What's it? I Object?
I Object.
I think they did some stuff like on Alternative Tentacles.
They did. That's one of Jello's favorite hardcore bands, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the guitar player used to run a DIY space here. The DIY space is still running, but he moved, I think, to Portland. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The other thing that was fun about this, and I'm going to bring this all back around, wrap this up in a nice bowl. So my daughter went with me, and she was digging through, and she had some CDs, A Day to Remember, and some other things that make my stomach turn.
Boo.
But she eventually, we got pinned in this corner because there were so many people in the store. I mean, every time you kind of tried to change places with someone, you basically became a sex offender because you know, the shuffling around and trying to get behind people and stuff. But anyway, she bought her very first record, and it was actually a double LP And I'm going to tell you who it is, and I'm not proud, but it was a all-time low, her favorite band.
Ouch.
She bought, yeah.
Hey, it's not like Maroon 5 or something.
A double LP, and she came home, and she had never played a record before, so she had to learn how to play the record.
That's
and
cool, so man. That's, don't be negative, man.
Well, yeah. That's No, that's totally it. Cool. I was going to say, it's actually really cool, because it's sort of like, you know, this circle of life, the chain continues, whatever cliche you want to do, you know. And it was fun.
That's some good bonding.
We had a great time. My daughter is my concert buddy sometimes, and of course she's getting her driver's license now. Maybe she won't want my old ass around anymore.
Yeah,
anyway. But anyway, but we had a nice time. I had a great record store day, great fun.
I like Tom. I think Tom Trump had the best record store. His kid drove him around so he could drink and eat pizza and bump into people.
Exactly. I had to pee so bad by the time I got home. Oh.
No, none of you guys wanted the Corey Feldman 7-inch or the Space Jam double LP?
No, but the guy who was standing next to the record store wanted that more than anything. Like, he really wanted Space Jam.
That was, I think that was probably the hot ticket item, but it wasn't like the cake box set or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, what if he,
this is what's, these are the things that are jamming up our pressing plants so that we can't get our records.
See, I want the laser disc. Freaking
Space Jam.
But listen to this, Tom. Laser disc
for Space Jam.
Like, record pressing plants are making money off this garbage, right? And don't we want a record plant to be making money so they have the ability to press records that don't make as much money?
Well, but that's not exactly the way it works, though.
It kind of
they're
is,
always
though.
Gonna put, but they're always going to put the ones that make money to the front of the line, so the good stuff is always going to suffer.
That's fine. I mean, that's fine, because, like, if there is no shitty Space Jam or Fleetwood Mac or Beatles reissues, I don't think the small punk community can really support record plants in of themselves, to tell you the truth. I think you need the garbage industry to support that. And if the price to pay is you got to wait 6 months to get, you know, a Jell-O record, instead of not getting it or getting it and having to pay $40 for it, it's worth it, you know?
Well, and you know what? I mean, what's crazy is, and this will be so foreign, I think, to all four of us, but the original pressing for the Space Jam 7-inch goes for triple digits on Discogs. So this thing was actually sought after in a non-ironic way. People were
paying. I didn't even know it was a real thing.
Yeah, no, it's real. There was a double LP that came out surprisingly, because it was the 90s when vinyl was dead, basically. But if you go on Discogs, I remember seeing triple digits that people were paying.
Like, who wants that piece of garbage? Who's buying that?
I don't know.
That,
it was just so ridiculous. And
it's nostalgia. It's just, you know, hanging on the wall, probably.
I guess. And then the Corey Feldman one was just. I said that was just a meme. I did an article for New Noise about Record Store Day, and I just said, this is a fucking real life just meme.
I don't mind the quote, though. I think it's funny. I like funny stuff. That's funny, you know.
Yeah, but would you pay for it?
It was like $16.
It'll be in the dollar bin soon enough.
I mean, I wouldn't buy it, but if there was something that I was into, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, if there's like a Rockford File 7-inch, I would probably buy it, you know? Or a Kojak 7-inch, I would buy it, you know?
X-Files theme song?
No, I don't like X-Files. Twin Peaks. Anyways, somebody play a song.
Me! Because I didn't even get to talk about all my releases. We just talked about Bowie and then moved on. So, the other stuff I bought, real quick, that was not Record Store Day stuff, I bought, I got the new Shins record, and I got the new Dirty Projectors record to be as indie rock as possible to go against all the other stuff that you guys are buying. And I also, to fill out my Patti Smith collection.
Hipster.
Yep. Yep.
Sorry, cough. I got a little some of my throat there, Greg.
Yep, Patti Smith is just for hipsters. And people with good taste. So Patti Smith, I filled out the collection by getting...
Touché.
I didn't have Radio Ethiopia for some reason, her second album. And I got the one... Oh, what the crap is it called? It's a covers album that came out about a decade ago.
Oh, yeah. It's called 12 Songs or something. Yeah,
12. I think it's just called 12. Hold on. I'm looking real quick.
Pissing in the river.
Yeah. It's called 12. And it's got... covers of all this stuff that she loved, like Jimi Hendrix and the Stones. But it's got some interesting ones, like the Smells Like... it's got Smells Like Teen Spirit done as, like, a bluegrass song. It's pretty cool. It's a good listen. And then the one other record release that I got is called... And I just got it on a whim because I thought it looked cool. There were a lot of cool-looking compilations. And I got one called The Rough Guide to Delta Blues, which was remastered. It originally came out in 2002. So I'm going to play a song off of that to get as far away from what Tom Trauma played as possible. Whatever that was. Something screaming, probably. I'm going to play some...
All's fair.
I'm going to play some music from some people with real problems who had some real stuff to be mad about. Let's see. Robert Johnson would be an obvious choice. Muddy Waters is a little too obvious. Sun House is a name that some people might know, but a little deeper cut.
I'm going to play a song called Country Farm Blues.
And this is off Guide to Delta Blues.
With a great long spade, put you down in a ditch with a great long spade. Wish to God that you hadn't never been made. On the Sunday, the boys be looking sad. On the Sunday, the boys be looking sad. On the Sunday, the boys be looking sad. Just wondering about how much time it had.
And that was blues legend Sun House. So listen, that was Record Store Day. I hope you had a fun time. You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org about your position on Record Store Day. Let's do a little bit of news. Big news this week in the punk news world. Fest 16 has released its lineup and its date. Fest 16 is October 27, October 29. Pre-Fest in Little Ybor, Florida is October 25 and 26. Bands playing include Against Me doing all of Reinventing Axl Rose for the first time ever, I believe. Hot Water Music, Hum, Lillington, Snapcase, Smoking Popes, Teenage Bottle Rockets, Iron Reagan, Beach Slang, Mustard Plug, Off With Their Heads, Tim Barry, Toys That Kill, Direct Hit, Red City Radio, Pears, Dope Means, Meat Wave, Nothington, Copyrights, basically all your, or Mikey Erk.
You missed the most important one.
I'm getting to it. Screaming Females is playing, which is cool. All the Orgcore bands that the Orgcore people love, they're all here. And also, kind of buried in it was the reunion of Adam and his package.
Yeah.
Or not Adam and his package. Adam and his package? But isn't the other band playing too that includes Adam and his package?
Isn't Adam's package just one guy?
It is.
Yes, but he reunited with his package. No, but, sounds so dirty.
You know, I do miss mine sometimes.
Armalite's playing. Armalite's not playing. I thought they were, but Adam and his package is playing, which is his first show in a long time, I think. So people seem pretty psyched about this. People seem psyched. I think people are just psyched because it's fast. There's nothing really here that's, I guess, super surprising. I think the most surprising thing is Against Me. But other than that, I mean, the criticism of Fest is that it's the same bands every year. But the counterattack is that it's the same bands every year because that's what we want to see. So I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah. I would say that there's a few surprise ones. I mean, Rainer Maria, they're, by all accounts, an emo band. I mean, I love them, but they are not an orgcore, rough voice, melodic, whatever band. And then you got Hum, too. I mean, they're like a shoegaze-influenced alternative band. You got the Smoking Popes, who are definitely in the punk realm, but their own kind of thing that I don't associate with a lot of fest bands. And then, I mean, Adam and His Package for me. But then, there are a lot of the usuals. I mean, Teenage Bottle Rocket, sure, you'd expect that.
Well,
88 Fingers Louie's cool. They definitely fit, but they're...
What I find interesting are the just the headliners, Hot Water Music and Against Me. You got two. Hot Water Music's technically a Florida band, right?
Yeah, they're from Gainesville.
I mean, they got. I mean, so you have Against Me, Hot Water Music, and I know they haven't said the last what the other headliner is.
It's a local show.
But I mean, are they doing just like what quote unquote local bands now for this one? Do you think
it's probably just a coincidence?
I mean, for headliners,
yeah.
No, I think it's a coincidence, and it might be. I would say it's a question of economics. But doesn't Laura Jane Grace like live in Chicago now or something?
Yeah,
and I think they're all. And I mean, their bassist is from Sweden, so
yeah.
Is she in Chicago?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's way more awesome up here than in Florida.
You know, it's funny because you things get kind of blown out of proportion because the fact of the matter is, Against Me is a huge band in our little world, and Hot Water Music is a huge band in our little world. But these are bands that on their own, they don't draw huge crowds. It's kind of just the fest has always been just about the sheer quantity of good bands. You know, a couple of years ago, remember they had the Descendants and they tried to do some bigger, like outdoor stuff, but they seem to be back to the roots. And it's just, this festival is not for me. I mean, this is not designed for me, but there's enough there to keep me entertained if I were to win the lottery.
For me, this would be amazing. I mean, Against Me playing Reinventing Axl Rose. I mean, I know there's a big debate about like full album shows, but like that is, especially in Gainesville.
That would be cool.
Especially in Gainesville, that's going to be fucking incredible. See,
that's how I know I'm getting old, because I'm like, the Punk Rock Bowling lineup is the only one that really piques my interest anymore. Even like the Riot Fest lineup, it's like, ugh. It's just not for me, and that's fine, because nobody my age goes to shows hardly, so they can't really cater to me. I understand that.
Yeah.
You got to get your daughter to drive. That's the problem with people your age.
That's a long way, man. Get a lot of hours
driving the shows. Yeah. They can't rely on their children. They're too crippled to get out of the house.
Where do you guys stand on bands playing full albums? I guess my stance is I've seen some bands do, like, I saw Slayer do Raining Blood live, and I was really, really excited. But in a way, it was a letdown, because when they came out, the whole time, I was like, man, I can't wait for Raining Blood. I can't wait for Raining Blood, the last track. And I couldn't really enjoy the first 9 tracks of the album, because the whole time I was waiting for that huge breakdown.
Really? Yeah. Angel of Death, the opening track, one of the greatest songs ever. You couldn't enjoy Angel of Death. Not Angel of Death. I'm sorry. What's the first song?
Angel of Death, album? Tom. Angel of Death.
Yeah, Angel of Death. Okay. I was going to say, I was right. I'm see now.
And Crippled.
I saw him do that twice, John.
It was awesome, but I
enjoyed it both times.
I didn't enjoy it as much as I was hoping I would, because the whole time I was waiting for the breakdown. But by contrast, I saw the Melvins do 5 albums live, and I loved it because they did the songs all out of order, and they did the songs in different ways and different styles, which I thought was really interesting. Riot Fest has got a bunch of bands doing full albums. So what do you guys like full albums, or do you not like full
I
albums?
I like them.
You know,
because then they play the deep cuts that never make the set list otherwise. Yeah, because you might hear those songs like lots of times it's like the 7th track, it's like my favorite track, whatever it might be. And it's always one of those that you love but never makes the cut. For a band that has like a bajillion albums, they're basically playing the hits or whatever's off the new album plus some hits. So if they go back and play like Dinosaur Jr., You're Living All Over Me is one of my favorite albums of all time. But like the stuff that Lou Barlow does at the end, like this really weird stuff, is not going to make a normal set list for them. So it's something that you'd probably only get to hear going to a full album show for that, for You're Living All Over Me.
I've only been to one record, like full record show, and it was Rancid playing into Outcome the Wolves.
That'd be kind of cool.
How is that different than a regular show, Ricky?
Exactly. So if anything, it made them just leave out other songs from Rancid 2000 or whatever.
Ricky's sitting there screaming Red Hot Moon.
Yeah,
Red
Hot exactly.
Moon, like, pumping his fist in the air.
And they played Red Hot Moon the first time I saw them ever. But so it was cool. Like I didn't mind it. But the thing is, what's coming next. I think that's one of the drawbacks. It depends on what record the band is playing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I've seen
this a bunch of times.
Yeah. So should we just transition into the story that's sort of linked to this?
No, let me say a word on this, just because I've seen this a number of times. And when it tends to work best for me is when it was, you know, when I was younger and I had a small record collection, I knew every song on the album, and I really had I guess I'd call it like an intimate relationship with certain albums. Now my record collection is so big that I can't really do that. It's only two or three albums a year that I listen to so much that I really have a good working knowledge of. So when I see something from that era, like I saw the Violent Femmes play their whole first album,
nice.
Jane's Addiction, Do Nothing, Shocking, and it was awesome. I mean, it was sublime. But you know,
Addiction.
But somebody like a Lawrence Arms, I don't know their albums all the way through. You know what I mean? I probably only know like two songs from the album. So
Tom really only buys the singles.
Exactly. No, CD singles, dude. The British style.
John, should I read? Do you want me to just read this story that we're talking about?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. So what we've been referencing and going around is Dinosaur Jr., The Lawrence Arms, Fishbone, The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, and six other bands will be playing full album sets at Riot Fest this year. Dinosaur Jr. playing You're Living All Over Me. The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones playing Let's Face It. Fishbone playing Truth and Soul.
You skipped what the best ones.
Oh, I'm sorry. Built to Spill. Keep it like a secret. Bayside, The Walking Wounded. Mayday Parade, A Lesson in Romantics. This is the one that I just, oh my God, I would kill to see this. Lawrence Arms playing O Calcutta. That Dog, Retreat from playing Retreat from the Sun. You see now, like that, I guarantee that Lawrence Arms one is going to be phenomenal, and I'm seeing them at Punk Rock Bowling at one of the club shows. That is, and I hope they do it there. That is going to be phenomenal because that is their record. That's just the quintessential Lawrence Arms record.
When I was drinking at the G-Man next to the Metro in Chicago, and he was my bartender, he told me that was the album of his that I should check out. So
that's
straight from the horse's mouth.
I think 10th anniversary is too soon to be doing album stuff.
But
that's only 11 years for O Calcutta. I mean, it's got to be like 20 years or. Well, I guess I don't know. I want to see Keep It Like a Secret. That's not quite 20 years, but I feel like 10 years. I mean, Bayside. Come on. I mean, 10th anniversary. It's just
I can't imagine 10 more years is going to make me want to hear Bayside do a whole album, Greg, but you know, maybe.
No, I wouldn't want to see that anyway, but I'm just saying, like, do people care about that one in general?
They should do that one for like a 60th anniversary, then I'll be dead and I won't have to listen to it.
Well, listen, speaking of people being dead inside, Streetlight Manifesto and Victory Records, after years of hustle and tussle, and after over a year of litigation, but I mean, this conflict goes back, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. Streetlight Manifesto and Victory Records have settled their lawsuit. What happens is Victory Records had Streetlight Manifesto signed to an extended contract. And out of his sort of anger, frontman Thomas Kalnacki released an alternate version on his own label of a Streetlight Manifesto record. And of course, Victory Records sued him for like $10 million or something. And I can't imagine Streetlight Manifesto bringing in $10 million. So anyways, Victory Records was only suing for $1 million, but I can't even imagine it bringing in $1 million. Anyways, after over a year of litigation, Victory Records and Streetlight Manifesto have settled and they released a very non-committal statement. The statement was, Victory Records and Streetlight Manifesto have amicably settled the litigation filed by Victory in the U.S. District Court in Illinois. The parties have agreed that it was in their mutual best interest to end their 15-year relationship. As part of the settlement, Victory agreed to sell Streetlight Manifesto all of their master recordings for an undisclosed sum, resolving claims that were asserted in the lawsuit. No further comment will be made by either party. I can't imagine that they quote sold them to Streetlight Manifesto for too much. I mean, because how much money does Kalnacki have? You know, he doesn't have $1 million to throw out. You know, it was probably in the double digits. Double digits of the thousands, if you will.
Double digits, like $20.
No, I have no idea, but I would guess like 25 or 30,000 or 40,000, something like that.
I have tens of dollars.
Of course, this follows another Victory Records issue where Victory Records lost a lawsuit against, I forget the name of the band, but it was $5 or $6 million. And so Victory Records has been embroiled in litigation on several.
It was in fact a day to remember.
It was. There you go.
Yes.
There you go. Let me see if I can.
Who puts on a show to forget? Sorry.
Anyways, so I'm curious as whether or not the reason they settled was because Victory Records has taken a beating and they need the money, or if it's just a coincidence, or maybe Victory Records doesn't even care. I don't know. Data Remember got $4 million from Victory Records, although Victory Records probably has not paid out as of yet, but I don't know.
There's just this week again, a metal band called Darkest Hour was talking about how they have never got a cent from Victory Records. Well, so it's just...
Here's a couple of questions. Does anybody have any sympathy for any band that signed the Victory Record within the past 5 years? Victory Records has a very bad... reputation. And what do you think this means for Streetlight Manifesto? What does it mean for Victory? Is Victory like in its death gasp, or is Victory so big that they don't even care about this shit?
I don't know.
I can't believe the sheer amount of records that label puts out. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Honestly,
go look at their catalog once. It's mind-boggling.
It seems like this is a very toxic label. I mean, they have to be doing something wrong to be getting sued and countersuing and being in court for so much. In terms of Streetlight Manifesto, I think they won't have an issue getting signed. They sell records. They're a popular band.
Are they, Ricky? I mean,
yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. They
still?
Yeah, they'll be fine.
This has been going on for 5 years, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're not like, they don't seem to be slowing down at any point. I know they just, they recently announced a pretty big U.S. tour, I believe, fairly recently. I think they'll be fine. And then plus, if they're planning on suing their label, they probably have a deal they're about to sign with someone else in the works.
Oh, I don't think Streetlight Manifesto is that big. I mean, they're big enough. I think they'll probably just put it out themselves. Because I mean,
possible too.
What's the label going to do for Streetlight Manifesto that they can't do themselves at this point? You know,
right? That's actually a good point. What I meant was, they probably have some sort of plan for, they obviously have some sort of plan for the future, whether it's another label or just doing it on their own, which they can probably do, definitely do, actually.
I'm reading currently the funniest band description I've ever heard on the Victory Records website. Do any of you guys know who Islander is?
No. No.
Neither do I. Okay, so here's the description, and tell me if you would want to listen to this. Part reggae-infused post-hardcore... No. Part no. funky no. new metal.
No. No.
It's music no. to break stuff to on a sunny day.
Okay. Yeah, like break stuff to, like the record itself. That's what I would break to that record.
I almost had an aneurysm from that.
Well listen, speaking of breaking records, Ricky, play a song. We'll come back and we'll wrap this up.
All right, so since we talked about Record Store Day, I'm going to play a song from one of the Record Store Day exclusives I got this year. And we actually didn't talk too much about this record when it came out, but you know, it was a pretty big deal. Nothington put out their first record in about 10 years on Red Scare called In the End. And since I picked up the Cobblestones 7-inch, I thought I'd just play the song Cobblestones. So here's Cobblestones by Nothington.
No, I always try to tell. I'm no stranger to regrets, trying to relive all the nights I don't remember that we spent.
And that was Cobblestones by Nothington. Let's wrap this up. Listen, it's the main man, or it was the main man's 70th birthday, and the main man is still doing what the main man does best. But the question is, for how long? Tom Trauma, who is the main man? Who is the main man?
Adam, I believe you're talking about the shirtless 5'1" wonder, Iggy Pop.
That's right.
The human tripod.
Dude, it's insane that Iggy is 70 and he's still doing the Iggy Pop thing. Of course, he's playing punk rock.
I'm glad Greg's here to appreciate my Wang humor.
he's 70. He's Wang still doing computers. His thing. He's going to be at Punk Rock Bowling. What can you say about Iggy Pop? I mean, his importance to punk rock cannot be overstated, even though he likes to distance himself from punk rock. He doesn't appreciate the comparison. But, we ran reviews of all three, the first three Stooges albums, The Stooges Funhouse and Raw Power. And this is a beautiful chance to get to see Iggy while he's still around. People talk about Joe Strummer, Joey Ramone. You can see Iggy right now.
I plan to at Punk Rock Bowling. He's been on my list to see live for quite a while. So, he's like... Him and like Choking Victim are like the ones I really, really, really want to see. So I'll be there.
Yeah, I saw Iggy in the Stooges once, and it really was amazing. Like no one can do what he does.
Same here, dude. I saw him one time, and it was amazing. I don't know what his solo act is. You know, I'm sure he's going to do more of his.
Actually, Tom,
later era stuff.
Let me jump in his set list right now. It appears he's kind of. Basically, his set list right now is a set list that he's never really done before. It's, you know, both Ashen brothers have passed away, so the Stooges are over.
Yeah.
And so what he's...
Yeah, Dave Alexander's dead. He is the lone survivor of the original quartet.
How crazy is that?
How is that possible?
Yeah, considering he was like a gutter junkie for years.
And also, he just came off the tour with the Queens from the Stone Age guys, where he kind of did like that album in full and some other tracks. So just looking at the set list right now, it's basically Iggy, from my perspective, making the argument as to why he's Iggy Pop. It's about one half Stooges tracks. It's about, one-third Stooges tracks, one-third classic Iggy tracks, basically the first two albums, for solo albums and some Kill City stuff, and then about one-third other stuff, including Repo Man. So it's basically Iggy Pop's greatest hits throughout his whole career,
Jane Williamson's not playing with him during his solo stuff, is he?
No, they actually might hate each other right now, which is kind of a bummer.
I was going to say, because other than James Williamson, obviously... The sax player is also dead. So actually, James Williamson is the only like stooge from the first three albums other than Iggy that's still alive. I mean, dude, Mike Watt might be the next longest running stooge after that because he played on all the reunion stuff.
Yeah, so I don't think anybody has anything else to say about Iggy. Oh, actually, Tom, you said something that kind of surprised me. You said side B of Funhouse is Aimless or something like that.
No, I said it's Unfocused.
Dude, side B of
it sounded like a musical nervous breakdown. It was, you know, the thing reading about the Stooges when you know when they originally started playing, they didn't really have songs. They just sort of like jammed, and Iggy just sort of vamped over top of it. And the first album especially, you know, I think it's sort of miraculous that they were able to make those coherent sort of proto-punk songs. But the second side of Funhouse, the first side is a bunch of kind of focused, driving, cool tracks. And the B-side is like a bad acid trip.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, I know you said you love it, but it's just it sounds like a nervous breakdown. Well,
that's why.
I don't dislike it, but I don't listen to it a ton.
Dude, I love the to me the A side sets it up, and this is the Stooges do it at the.
You might be a jazz hipster, John.
I actually have tried to get in jazz. I don't really like jazz that much, but like side A is just like dynamite songs, and then side B the destruction just gets harder and harder until the last track. Which is Funhouse, which is just pure sonic destruction. I think it's one of the greatest musical statements ever. I totally disagree with you, Tom.
You two guys who don't believe in better living through chemistry are raving about this drug-induced like mania on side two. I can't believe it.
Go ahead, Greg. What were you saying?
I am pretty big into jazz, and it's not just the saxophone that makes side B jazzy. It is that feel like Tom, you're saying, like maybe it's kind of like in their early days where they're like, let's just fucking hash it out in the studio and just go nuts. It's like, oh, we only got like an EP's worth of songs, but let's just hit record and see what happens.
It's only got 7 songs total, if I remember correctly.
Right, right.
So it still was only an EP's worth of songs. They just did a freak out at the end.
Well, right. Isn't it? Well, how long is
it's about 35
minutes. It's probably 35 minutes or something.
Yeah, so it's a full length. Yeah, you got a nice. I mean,
the first album is 30 minutes long, but the fact of the matter is there's one 10-minute song. Most of the other songs are only around 3 minutes.
Yeah, and it just feels improvised, which is cool because for a band, I mean, they're proto punk, if anything. You know that themselves from punk, but you know that is such a unpunk thing to do, which makes it even more punk, which is why it's awesome.
There was no limits at that point. They didn't know what they were doing. You know, it was. I mean, dude, the first Stooges album. I mean, Funhouse came out in 1970. You almost had to put that into perspective. Like I said, the first Stooges album came out before the first Black Sabbath album. They were doing crazy stuff ahead of their time. And dude, 2 years after the Summer of Love. They put out their first album, and it sounds like somebody ran into the Summer of Love with a sledgehammer and just started smashing hippie brains. I mean,
it's such a short period of
time. It really,
yeah, it's like the first Velvet Underground album coming out in 1967. Yeah. It's like everyone's about like, oh, LSD and groovy, man. And they're like, yeah, we're doing fucking
heroin,
black tar heroin over here and just squealing feedback.
Was that the like first chord for the whole first song. Velvet Underground album was only 1967?
1967, yeah. They put out 4 albums, one a year, 1967, 1968, 1969, and 1970. It was Loaded, and then they were done.
It was such an amazing, you know, era of creativity, the amount of stuff that was coming out that
dude, time. I mean,
we're still digging up stuff that was coming from that era, dude, and it's
check this, man. 67 to 71, you got the best, like the classic out of the Rolling Stones, Velvet Underground, the Stooges, Black Sabbath. So if you had it's like one like mind blowing David Bowie, you've got like one mind blowing
Alice Cooper, Alice Cooper,
Zeppelin,
Hendrix,
yep, Zeppelin.
You've got like one.
Yeah, the bands that were all operating at the same time is really mind blowing.
Man, I mean, wow.
Can you imagine if the Fest existed then?
Dude.
Oh wait, that was Woodstock.
None of those bands would be playing down there.
If you look at
in Florida, it'd be Leonard Skinner.
if you look at some of these like these English festivals from back then, it's like Hawkwind, Motorhead, the Stooges, Pink Fairies, all on the same bill. It's insane.
Yeah, and the Who, and the, you know, and they're playing like a half hour.
Yeah. All right, anyway, let's wrap this up. Let's play a classic Iggy track in tribute to Iggy. This is the Stooges doing 1970.
Yeah.
That was a Stooges doing 1970. Listen, if you don't have Funhouse, run out and buy it right now. I actually say maybe listen to the Stooges in chronological order. Stooges 1, Funhouse, then Raw Power. Do you guys agree?
If I were talking to a newbie, I would say you either start with the first album or with Raw Power. Funhouse is more advanced. Raw Power is a more traditional rock and roll sounding album, I think. It's like the other bands started to actually have an influence on them.
Hey, listen, Tom, what do you do with Alice Cooper v. Stooges? I can never pick a winner.
Really? Stooges.
Well,
Stooges.
No,
come on.
No. Here's the real tough part is the Stooges had such an amazing but short run. The early Alice Cooper albums, and I've recently really started to get back into them, are so amazing. And there's so much good material. The sheer quantity, and I'm not talking Alice Cooper like the cheesy MTV 80 guys.
Killer,
you know, that's who. I'm afraid that's who like Ricky and Greg are thinking of.
No,
the band when it was a band when they
killer,
were a five
man. How about
band.
Killer?
They were amazing.
No, yeah, School's Out.
Killer, dude, School's Out is one of the weaker ones, LP-wise.
No, but,
Killer is great. Love It to Death is great.
Billion Dollar Babies.
But no, Under My Baby. Wheels is a fantastic song. Or is that too late?
No,
the only one on School's Out is... School's Out doesn't have any... School's Out, I think, is the only hit on School's Out.
Oh, no, I love School's Out, man. School's Out has
Under
like,
My Wheels is from...
Killer. It's his first
Love
track
it to
on
death.
Killer.
Love It to Death.
No.
What was it, Killer?
Under My Wheels is the first track on death. Killer. School's Out has got a lot of killer tracks. It's got Looney Tunes. It's got Gutter Cats versus the Jets. It's got...
Yeah, but I'm saying hits as far as like radio songs.
Yeah, you just School's Out. Anyway, man, Alice Cooper is
I think
so
one of you guys needs to do a sonic reducer to educate the rest of us on the good...
You know, maybe.
But I mean, you listen to a song like the Ballad of Dwight Frye or something, dude. That's so.
Dude,
good,
and that's why I get so frustrated when we talk about Alice Cooper at punk news. People are like, Alice Cooper, what's that got to do with punk? Get that MTV bullshit out of here. It's like,
well, yeah, because they're thinking of like, but, my love is a bed of nails, or like the cheesy,
also.
Like later, yeah, Poison.
But
Poison. Now that was like when I was like,
didn't he and Ozzy also do a song together?
No, it was
like an anti drug song or something.
No, you
think
of Lemmy and Lemmy and Ozzy. It's Lemmy and Ozzy did a track together.
No. Alice Cooper and Ozzy Osbourne did a song together.
I don't think so, Ricky.
Yes, they did.
They might have.
No,
they might have.
I'm going to look this up.
I don't think so, dude. Let's look this up.
Hang on a second. Alice Cooper.
This is the wrap up of Ozzy. The podcast.
But I mean, I get so frustrated when people just dismiss out. Like, dude, between him and the Stooges, that is punk rock. That's the birth of punk rock. Maybe Velvet Underground,
well,
too.
I don't know about that.
Okay, they did.
Dictators.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that. But those guys are influenced by Alice Cooper and the Stooges.
Sonics.
They did do a song together.
They did?
Yeah, Sonics.
Yes, it's called Hey Stupid, spelled with two O's instead of a U.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ozzy's not on
that. That was a minor hit.
It came out in 91.
Dude, Ozzy's not on Hey Stupid, is he?
Yes, he is.
I don't think so.
He must have sang backup on it. That video is so hilariously awful.
Yes, it is.
It's an anti-drug song?
Yeah.
Oh man,
I think it is.
No, I thought it's an anti-suicide song. Isn't Hey Stupid an anti-suicide song?
I remember.
Hey Stupid, don't kill yourself.
It actually makes me suicidal when I watch the video.
I think it's about
sure it's
like
working.
How kids shouldn't do heroin and stuff like that.
I'm pretty sure Hey Stupid is about suicide. I'm almost positive.
It might be both. I don't know.
All right, it's enough. It's enough already with the minutia about Alice Cooper. Holy
but
cow.
Actually, Ricky is right.
Go listen to Refrigerator Heaven, kids.
Ozzy Osbourne does backing vocals on it, but you can't really hear him on it. Anyways,
no.
Well, okay, fine. They still
but he's
did
probably
it.
In the
he's
video.
He's on it though. He's on it. Ricky's right. I'm 0-2. I'm 0-2 with Bowie. 0-2 with Alice Cooper. Anyways, Tom, Ricky, Greg, thanks for being on. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Thanks for listening to this extended episode. We miss Adam White. We hope he comes back from a spiritual retreat, refreshed and happy. And we'll see you next week.